Chapter 44. A singularly brief courtship, married her. The tradition at Havenpool and elsewhere has ever been that this man was already her husband, Decimus Strong, who remarried her for appearance sake only. The illegitimate son of this lady by Sir John succeeded to the estates and honors, and his son after him, there being nobody on the alert to investigate their pretensions. Little difference would it have made to the present generation, however, had there been such a one, for the family in all its branches, lawful and unlawful, has been extinct these many score years, the last representative, but one being killed at the siege of Sherton Castle, while attacking in the service of the Parliament, and the other being outlawed later in the same century for a debt of £10, and dying in the county jail. The mansion house and its appurtenances were, as I have previously stated, destroyed, excepting one small wing, which now forms part of a farmhouse, and is visible as you pass along the railway from Casterbridge to Ivell. The outline of the old Bowling Green is also distinctly to be seen. This, then, is the reason why the only lawful marriage of Sir John, as recorded in the obscure register at Havenpool, does not appear in the pedigree of the House of Horsley. Spring 1893. The Duke's reappearance of family tradition. According to the kinsman who told me the story, Christopher Sweatman's house, on the outskirts of King's Hintock village, was in those days larger and better kept than when, many years later, it was sold to the lord of the manor adjoining. After having been in the Sweatman family, as one may say, since the conquest, some people would have it to be that the thing happened at the house opposite, belonging to one Childs, with whose family the Sweatmans afterwards intermarried. But that it was at the original homestead of the Sweatmans can be shown in various ways, chiefly by the unbroken traditions of the family, and indirectly by the evidence of the walls themselves, which are the only ones thereabout with windows mullioned in the Elizabethan manner, and plainly of a date anterior to the event, while those of the other house might well have been erected 50 or 80 years later, and probably were, since the choice of Sweatman's house by the fugitive was doubtless dictated by no other circumstance than its then suitable loneliness. It was a cloudy July morning just before dawn, the hour of two having been struck by Sweatman's one-handed clock on the stairs, that is still preserved in the family. Christopher heard the strokes from his chamber, immediately at the top of the staircase, and overlooking the front of the house. He did not wonder that he was sleepless. The rumors and excitements which had latterly stirred the neighborhood, to the effect that the rightful King of England had landed from Holland, at a port only 18 miles to the southwest of Sweatman's house, were enough to make wakeful and anxious even a contented yeoman like him. Some of the villagers, intoxicated by the news, had thrown down their scythes and rushed to the ranks of the invader. Christopher Sweatman had weighed both sides of the question, and had remained at home. Now as he lay thinking of these and other things, he fancied that he could hear the footfall of a man on the road leading up to his house, a byway which led scarce anywhere else, and therefore a tread was at any time more apt to startle the inmates of the homestead than if it had stood in a thoroughfare. The footfall came opposite the gate and stopped there. 1 minute, 2 minutes passed, and the pedestrian did not proceed. Christopher Sweatman got out of bed and opened the casement. "Hoy! Who's there?" apostrophe cries he. "A friend," apostrophe came from the darkness. "And what mid ye want at this time o' night?" apostrophe apostrophe says Sweatman. "Shelter. I've lost my way." Apostrophe, "What's thy name?" Apostrophe apostrophe, there came no answer. "Be ye one of King Monmouth's men?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "He that asks no questions will hear no lies from me. I am a stranger, and I am spent and hungered. Can you let me lie with you tonight?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Sweatman was generous to people in trouble, and his house was roomy. "Wait a bit," apostrophe he said, "and I'll come down and have a look at thee, anyhow. ... He struck a light, put on his clothes, and descended, taking his horn lantern from a nail in the passage, and lighting it, before opening the door. The rays fell on the form of a tall, dark man in cavalry accoutrements and wearing a sword. He was pale with fatigue and covered with mud, though the weather was dry. "Prithee take no heed of my appearance," said the stranger. "But let me in." That his visitor was in sore distress admitted of no doubt, and the yeoman's natural humanity assisted the other's sad importunity and gentle voice. Sweatman took him in, not without a suspicion that this man represented in some way Monmouth's cause, to which he was not unfriendly in his secret heart. At his earnest request, the newcomer was given a suit of the yeoman's old clothes in exchange for his own, which, with his sword, were hidden in a closet in Sweatman's chamber. Food was then put before him, and a lodging provided for him in a room at the back. Here he slept till quite late in the morning, which was Sunday, the 6th of July, and when he came down in the garments that he had borrowed, he met the household with a melancholy smile. Besides Sweatman himself, there were only his two daughters, Grace and Leonard. The latter was, oddly enough, a woman's name here, and both had been enjoined to secrecy. They asked no questions, and received no information, though the stranger regarded their fair countenances with an interest almost too deep. Having partaken of their usual breakfast of ham and cider, he professed weariness, and retired to the chamber whence he had come. In a couple of hours or thereabout he came down again, the two young women having now gone off to morning service. Seeing Christopher bustling about the house without assistance, he asked if he could do anything to aid his host. As he seemed anxious to hide all differences, and appear as one of themselves, Sweatman set him to get vegetables from the garden, and fetch water from Buttock's spring in the dip near the house,
though the spring was not called by that name till years after, by the way.
"And what can I do next?" says the stranger, when these services had been performed. His meekness and docility struck Christopher much, and won upon him. "Since you be minded to," says the latter, "you can take down the dishes, and spread the table for dinner. Take a pewter plate for thyself, but the trenchers will do for we." But the other would not, and took a trencher likewise, in doing which he spoke of the two girls, and remarked how comely they were. This quietude was put an end to by a stir out of doors, which was sufficient to draw Sweatman's attention to it, and he went out. Farm hands who had gone off, and joined the Duke on his arrival, had begun to come in with news that a midnight battle had been fought on the moors to the north, the Duke's men, who had attacked, being entirely worsted. The Duke himself, with one or two lords and other friends, had fled, no one knew whither. "There has been a battle," says Sweatman, on coming indoors after these tidings, and looking earnestly at the stranger. "May the victory be to the rightful in the end, whatever the issue now," says the other, with a sorrowful sigh. "Dost really know nothing about it?" said Christopher. "I could have sworn you was one from that very battle." "I was here before 3 o'clock this morning, and these men have only arrived now." "True," said the yeoman. "But still, I think," "do not press your question," the stranger urged. "I am in a strait, and can refuse a help or nothing. Such inquiry is, therefore, unfair." "True again," said Sweatman, and held his tongue. The daughters of the house returned from church, where the service had been hurried by reason of the excitement. To their father's questioning if they had spoken of him who sojourned there, they replied that they had said never a word, which, indeed, was true, as events proved. He bade them serve the dinner, and, as the visitor had withdrawn since the news of the battle, prepared to take a platter to him upstairs. But he preferred to come down and dine with the family. During the afternoon, more fugitives passed through the village, but Christopher Sweatman, his visitor, and his family kept indoors. In the evening, however, Sweatman came out from his gate and, hearkening in silence to these tidings and more, wondered what might be in store for him for his last night's work. He returned homeward by a path across the mead that skirted his own orchard. Passing here, he heard the voice of his daughter Leonard expostulating inside the hedge, her words being, "Don't eat, sir, don't. I prithee let me go." Apostrophe, why, sweetheart? Apostrophe, apostrophe, because I've a promised another. Apostrophe, apostrophe, peeping through, as he could not help doing, he saw the girl struggling in the arms of the stranger, who was attempting to kiss her, but finding her resistance to be genuine, and her distress unfeigned, he reluctantly let her go. Sweatman's face grew dark, for his girls were more to him than himself. He hastened on, meditating moodily all the way. He entered the gate, and made straight for the orchard. When he reached it, his daughter had disappeared, but the stranger was still standing there. "Sir," apostrophe apostrophe said the yeoman, his anger having in no wise abated, "I've seen what has happened. I have taken thee into my house, at some jeopardy to myself, and, whoever you be, the least I expected of thee was to treat the maidens with a seemly respect. You have not done it, and I no longer trust you. I am the more watchful over the men, that they are motherless, and I must ask thee to go after dark this night." Apostrophe apostrophe, the stranger seemed dazed at discovering what his impulse had brought down upon his head, and his pale face grew paler. He did not reply for a time. When he did speak, his soft voice was thick with feeling. "Sir," apostrophe says he, "I own that I am in the wrong, if you take the matter gravely. We do not what we would, but what we must. Though I have not injured your daughter as a woman, I have been treacherous to her as a hostess and friend in need. I'll go, as you say, I can do no less. I shall doubtless find a refuge elsewhere." Apostrophe, they walked towards the house in silence, where Sweatman insisted that his guest should have supper before departing. By the time this was eaten, it was dusk, and the stranger announced that he was ready. They went upstairs to where the garments and sword lay hidden, till the departing one said that on further thought he would ask another favor, that he should be allowed to retain the clothes he wore, and that his host would keep the others and the sword till he, the speaker, should come or send for them. "As you will," apostrophe said Sweatman. "The gain is on my side, for those clouts were but kept to dress a scarecrow next fall." Apostrophe apostrophe, they suit my case, apostrophe said the stranger sadly. "However much they may misfit me, they do not misfit my sorry fortune now." Apostrophe apostrophe, nay then, apostrophe said Christopher relenting, "I was too hasty. SH apostrophe LT bide." Apostrophe apostrophe, but the other would not, saying that it was better that things should take their course. Notwithstanding that Sweatman importuned him, he only added, "If I never come again, do with my belongings as you list. In the pocket you will find a gold snuff box, and in the snuff box 50 gold pieces. Apostrophe apostrophe, but keep 'em for thy use, man." Apostrophe apostrophe said the yeoman. "No," apostrophe says the parting guest, "they are foreign pieces, and would harm me if I were taken. Do as I bid thee. Put away these things again, and take especial charge of the sword. It belonged to my father's father, and I value it much. But something more common becomes me now." Apostrophe apostrophe, saying which, he took, as he went downstairs, one of the ash sticks used by Sweatman himself for walking with. The yeoman lighted him out to the garden hatch, where he disappeared through Clamor's Gate by the road that crosses King's Hintock Park to Evers Head. Christopher returned to the upstairs chamber and sat down on his bed reflecting. Then he examined the things left behind, and surely enough, in one of the pockets the gold snuff box was revealed, containing the 50 gold pieces as stated by the fugitive. The yeoman next looked at the sword which its owner had stated to have belonged to his grandfather. It was two-edged, so that he almost feared to handle it. On the blade was inscribed the words Andrea Ferrara, apostrophe, and among the many fine chasings were a rose and crown, the plume of the Prince of Wales, and two portraits. Portraits of a man and a woman, the man's having the face of the first King Charles, and the woman's, apparently, that of his queen. Sweatman, much awed and surprised, returned the articles to the closet, and went downstairs pondering. Of his surmise he said nothing to his daughters, merely declaring to them that the gentleman was gone, and never revealing that he had been an eyewitness of the unpleasant scene in the orchard that was the immediate cause of the departure. Nothing occurred in Hintock during the week that followed, beyond the fitful arrival of more decided tidings concerning the utter defeat of the Duke's army and his own disappearance at an early stage of the battle. Then it was told that Monmouth was taken, not in his own clothes, but in the disguise of a countryman. He had been sent to London, and was confined in the Tower. The possibility that his guest had been no other than the Duke made Sweatman unspeakably sorry now. His heart smote him at the thought that, acting so harshly for such a small breach of good faith, he might have been the means of forwarding the unhappy fugitive's capture. On the girls coming up to him he said, "Get away with ye, wenches. I fear you have been the ruin of an unfortunate man." Apostrophe, apostrophe, on the Tuesday night following, when the yeoman was sleeping as usual in his chamber, he was, he said, conscious of the entry of someone. Opening his eyes, he beheld by the light of the moon, which shone upon the front of his house, the figure of a man who seemed to be the stranger moving from the door towards the closet. He was dressed. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.